Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today I'm joined by Peter Hawkins again, and this is similar to our past conversations, just a really exquisite conversation for me. Peter's one of a handful of people, a small group of people who've had such a profound impact on the way I hold this craft of coaching. Today we're going to get into the meta crisis, what that means for us as coaches, why it's inviting us into a radical revision of the work that we do. And it'll be a super practical conversation. Peter's going to share tons and tons of examples of moves he makes with his clients, of questions he asks, of inquiries he invites them into. We will talk about why we've got to move beyond this notion of just coaching an individual where we atomize the individual, separate them from the life around them and the consequences of that. And so we'll talk about how we have to coach not just individuals, but the teams, the organizations, the family systems, the world, the ecology. We have to include all of it, this ecology of life inside the coaching, and how we can do that on a level which is not just conceptual, but deeply embodied and attuned. We're attuned to the flow of life and how it wants to emerge through us and our clients and our organizations in this deep sense of collaboration and generativity. It's a really exquisite conversation. Peter even gets into topics like prayer. Prayer's become incredibly important for me, and I've been wondering about prayer in coaching. And then lo and behold, Peter shares in this conversation the place that he feels prayer can become extremely potent in a very practical way. Just a little bit more about Peter. Peter is one of the top global 100 coaches, an international thought leader on systemic coaching, executive teams, and board development. He's an emeritus professor of leadership at Henley Business School, honorary president of the Association of Executive Coaching, and chairman of Renewal Associates. He's a teacher in some of our programs, Reimagine Leadership being one of them, and he's a prolific author of many books. In this conversation in particular, we're going to be tapping into two of his most recent books, Beauty in Leadership and Coaching, and his newest book, Team of Teams Coaching, Using a Teaming Approach to Increase Business Impact. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I enjoyed it. So just to say, if you want to join our mailing list, you can head to coachesrising.com and join our ever-growing global community of transformational coaches called to serve the evolution of consciousness in our times. And you can also find out there about our acclaimed online programs. That all being said, let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Peter Hawkins. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, It can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. So Peter, I thoroughly enjoy our conversations. And so we're together again. And how are you doing, first of all?
I'm great. Staying cool amidst the heat wave we're currently experiencing.
Yeah.
And it's always a pleasure, Joel, to talk with you. I always find our conversations rich and generative.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's already like 50 different questions inside of me from our little check-in. So I'd love to start to contextualize our exploration today with something we have talked about in the past, but I think is worthy of us going into again, which is what's the context within which coaching is occurring, like the current world we find ourselves in, which I think since we last spoke has only increasingly become more uncertain and chaotic. And so could you talk about why it's important to talk about the meta crisis?
Yeah, I think in both the two books that have been published since we last talked, I very purposefully start with what is the great work and the great challenge of our time. And that is that, as I said on our last conversation, that there are many great challenges, like the climate crisis, like pollution, like migration, increasing mental illness, conflict. But at heart, there's a bigger challenge, which is they are all interconnected. We cannot deal with the climate crisis without dealing with growing inequality between countries and in countries. We can't deal with the growing spread of mental illness right around the world if we're not dealing with what's happening both ecologically and economically. We can't deal with pollution without dealing with loss of biodiversity. You know, they're all interconnected. And that's the polycrisis, but behind that is the metacrisis, whereby they are all symptoms of a failure for us to evolve human consciousness at the speed to which we have changed the world around us. So human consciousness is not keeping pace with the complexity and the interconnections and the way we have created the Anthropocene, as it's now often called. And so I think, you know, whether we're a coach, a consultant, an educator, a spiritual teacher, an HR director, a leader, we're all in the same work, the great work of our time, which is how do we evolve human consciousness for human beings to be future fit to live on this planet? That is, if you like, what I would say is the only game in town.
I mean, that's what we really stand for, Coaches Rising as well. And what are we saying? What is that? What is this evolution of human consciousness? One of the things we've explored on the podcast is the certain idea of what it means to be human that we've inherited from modernity, which is different from other conceptions of what it means to be human and why that's important when it comes to coaching. Could you share your understanding of that?
So in the book on beauty and leadership and coaching and and its role in transforming human consciousness, my second chapter is to look at how particularly accelerated by modernity, as you mentioned, we have shrunk human consciousness from indigenous participatory consciousness, where there wasn't a split between human and environment, right? There was we were indigenous, we belonged to a place, we were part of a place, we were part of the ecology, it wasn't something out there, to the move into urbanization and humans becoming human-centric, and then the movement to being individualistically centric, and then the move from embodied consciousness to head consciousness with people like Descartes and Newton, and then an even further one from sort of whole brain consciousness to left hemisphere. And this is what Ian McGilchrist writes so powerfully about in his two volumes on the matter of things. And you can see that also what happens in consultancy and coaching, right? If we're stuck in the left hemisphere, we become focused on the individual, and we become focused on the issues and the problems and how to resolve them. That's kind of left hemisphere coaching. And the great work of our time is partly to how do we expand human consciousness to whole brain, to embodied, to collective, to back to being participatory. So that's where I think the work that's needed in the development professions generally. And then if I can perhaps link that to in the book on team of teams coaching and how do you coach, which is all about how do we move from coaching individuals to coaching connections. And not just connections between people or in teams, but connections between teams and between divisions, between organizations and their stakeholders, between the stakeholders, between countries, between us and the environment. That the work, the great work, requires that we help coaches understand how to coach connections rather than individuals.
So let me see if I can articulate what I'm sat with, which is that I spoke to Jill Nephew recently, who's researching how we learn and how technology can really enhance human learning. She's very critical of large language models. It's really worth listening to her because she's kind of saying, in a sense, that the danger is they start to double down on what you're the picture you described, where it accentuates a kind of ungrounded, atomized, fixed knowledge, knowledge, and we live more and more in that world. So what I'm hearing is, in a sense, that there's an invitation into our embodied and participatory experience,
Knowing,
N
yeah,
knowing,
and
ways of
learning,
knowing, right? And
yeah.
so,
You see, I think with AI, the opportunity is that AI can actually do better than we can with a lot of what our left hemisphere neocortex does, which is data gathering and sorting, problem solving, collecting data and sorting it. And that should liberate us to do the things that AI can't do, which human beings do have the capacity, which they've shrunk and begun to lose, which you're pointing to. But the problem is, at the moment, AI is perhaps training us to be more like AI than liberate us. So like Ian McGilchrist's phrase about the left hemisphere neocortex applies to AI. It's a great servant, but a terrible master. Yeah, I like that phrase. And just to continue that thought, this notion about coaching the connections is also we're caught in this culture that's come from what I talk about modernity is the three C's of capital, carbon, and colonization, which kind of drove that whole era of human history, that we become very kind of problem centric and issue centric. So we ask, what do you want to talk about in coaching? And we see the individual as the client, and we see their agenda as what we should be focusing on. Well, I would say, no, that's going in the wrong direction. We shouldn't be on their agenda or my agenda. We should be on the agenda that life is knocking on the door asking to be attended to. And I think that is a fundamental shift, whether you're a coach, a team coach, a consultant, working in the development profession at any level.
So I want to ask how you do that, actually. And I think just to this is where I was going to go before is that from one way of understanding and learning, as I hear you name, that, and I think I'm not sure if you said this in our live conversation or in the check-in beforehand. So I want to, coaches need to know how to coach the individual, the relationships, the team. The organize the system, etc. Yeah, which I shared with you sounds good. Maybe you want to correct me on that. Yeah.
Yeah, because I shared this in our pre-talk, that if I look at what the world's crying out for, and I, like you, Joe, I've got the privilege of working in many different countries, right across sectors, and training people in over 110 countries. So I'm always looking out, what is it organizations in the world are requiring? And what I was saying to you is, I don't think they're requiring lots more individual coaches or team facilitators or consultants. Yeah. In fact, one CEO said to me in the research we did, I've got lots of people who coach my leaders. I've got lots of consultants who consult to different parts of my organization, but that's not where our challenges lie. All our challenges lie in the connections. It's not just the connections between people or across the team or between the teams or between the divisions. It's also the connections vertically, horizontally, between the organization and its stakeholder world, between their stakeholders. So a lot of conflict in organizations that gets enacted internally and interpersonally is actually not interpersonal conflict. It's different systemic needs that are being held by different parts of the system. So, the HR director is holding the employee need, and the sales director, the customer need, and the finance director, the investor need. Yeah, and the poor corporate and social responsibility person holding the ecological need and the community need. And so it's systemic conflict that unless we can create collective leadership that don't just hold on to their part of the system, but actually are working together to hold the connections and disconnections that are in the wider system, you end up with an organization with a lot of disconnect, a lot of non-alignment, and a lot of conflict. And coaching can make that worse.
So I think you helped me reframe what I was going to say before. So, because what I was going to say was, when I hear all those different aspects of, the possible territory of coaching, there's a way in which that could feel like it almost accentuates the intellectual knowing that we were highlighting before. Now I've got to have knowledge about this and I've got to have knowledge about that. And what I'm sat with is that also, do we not need people who can coach the livingness of those connections and the way that they move through the individuals, and the way the individuals and the teams and the systems, in a sense, like the flow of intelligence or life, cannot move through those in the way that it might want to, so that we need coaches who can help the you know, and I'm the language is new to me here, but the constrictions of that flow to metabolize so that new, more flourishing connections and relationships can come forth. And in some way, that's always manifesting through the individual you're with in the room, or the team you're sat with in the room. You know, how much can they conduct, how much can they hold? And, you know, there's a kind of felt sense. It's not just a concept, is it? You know, these are not just ideas, they're actually living connections. So I think I said enough to, yeah.
So let me address that in two very practical ways. But first, before the two practical ways, you see, I think there's a very important consciousness shift, which is you're never just coaching an individual. Learning, individual development, personal development don't exist because all learning or development happens in and through relationship. Yeah, that is for me very fundamental. And therefore, the second concept, which is important, is that every systemic level we are part of, like our family, a team, a division, an organization, a stakeholder world, the ecology, every level we're nested within is also nested within us. So people talk about the system as though it's something out there. No, it lives and breathes through us. So this basic systemic awareness that the whole exists through the particles, right? And the particles, but the whole is more than the sum of the particles. It is very fundamental. So that means if we bring that down practically, that when we're with an individual, it's not just an individual that walks through the door, right? Their team dynamic comes into the room because it's living and breathing through them. The organizational culture, which I define as something you stop noticing when you've worked somewhere for 3 months. So it's no good asking them about their organizational culture because it's not out there or, it lives and breathes in the way they speak, their habits, what they focus on and don't focus on. Yeah, what they leave outside the door is part of the culture. So our skills have to be to not listen to the coachee or the team, but to listen with and through to
Can you give me an
what.
example of that? Yeah, I love that.
So yes, let me give a very practical example. So what I'm doing when I'm I was with someone who said, "Oh, senior person," he said, "I don't need leadership development." He said, because there was 360 being done for all the senior leaders in this growing organization. He said, "I've earned more than I've ever needed, you know, than I ever thought was possible, and I'm more senior than I ever thought, and you know." So why do I need leadership development? And I said, so you know, you're still in your midlife. So what really are you passionate about? And he started telling me about his children and what his children do, and supporting them on their horse riding and all sorts of other things, and their music. And he was suddenly very passionate. So his family dynamic was living and breathing in the room. And I was listening to that, and I said, "What would you like your children, if you died tomorrow, to hear your colleagues saying about the difference you made in this organization? What would make you feel that they're proud of you and you're proud of what they've seen from that eulogy?" And he started, you know, it's suddenly this guy who was very resistant was very emotionally present. And he started to tell me things. And I said, "Well, if you died tomorrow, is that what they would hear?" With a long pause, he said, "All right, yeah, I do need some leadership development." But now you see what we were looking at was a split between, I don't, I've got enough to do all the stuff I really care about back at home. But these two were different worlds. Yeah. But now it's not just about work being to earn the money to support his kids and to have what he didn't have. It's about what's the bigger system that connects his family world and what's needed by his colleagues for him to make a greater contribution to birthing what's next at the organization, not just
Yeah.
birthing what's next in his children's development.
So, did you work for then with him about what he wanted to be as a who he wanted to be as a leader through that inquiry as well, or was it more about the relationship between him and his colleagues and what could come into being through there?
Well, as you know, very practically, and I teach this on the program that I've been doing with you on revisioning leadership. I don't start with, what sort of leader do you want to be? What do you want from coaching? I often start by saying, "Tell me the story of your life in just 2 minutes." It connects the moment you were born with being here in the room right now. And people go, "Ugh," because that stops them giving me their potted CV, which they've trotted out many, many times, or their LinkedIn profile. Then I'll say, and I teach this on the programs we do, often I'll say, so I get a feel of you. Take me to a moment in your last 3 months where your heart was singing. And notice I don't say tell me about, I say take me to. Take me with you to that back to that moment. So that moment is living between us right now. And that creates a kind of different heart connection. And it provides the platform where I can then say, so tell me, Joel, who and what does your life and work serve? Who does it create value for? And then when you tell me about your partner and your daughter that we were talking about earlier, and when you tell me about the company and us and the people who work in it and the people who come on the courses, and I'll say, well, who beyond the people who come on the courses and who else and who beyond that? So I'll really open up more and more windows. And who beyond the human realm? And who beyond your lifetime? I'll extend and extend. And then I'll say to you, well, if all those people in the room, if your wife was here, Joel, your daughter was here, she's four, is she?
Five, yeah.
Five. Your daughter is a grown up and a parent was here. The people in your organization, the people who haven't yet come to Coach Rising were here. What would they be telling us is the most important work that you and I need to be doing together? Because now we're on not your agenda or their agenda. We're on the agenda of you and all the connections in your nested systems. Yeah. And at the end, I won't say, what's been helpful, Joel, and what's not been helpful, because that makes me the supplier of coaching. Rather, it's something we're doing together in service of a bigger world. I'll say, if those people we've talked about today were in the room, what would they value about the work you and I have done together? And what would their challenge be to us? So now it's not feedback from you to me, it's feedback from your world to our joint partnership.
And I can feel, without even engaging in that inquiry, I can feel as you name those different people and the perspectives, what it opens up in me, which is, a wider sense of self, like a sense of self which is rooted in those perspectives and relationships that include that's made of them. And it like physiologically feels quite different, quite expanded. And whilst we didn't have the space to explore it, like I can feel the possibility of quite different things arising inside of those invitations that you made, which is really beautiful. Yeah.
Can I just mention kind of the another very kind of practical way? I always say, sitting in on many executive team meetings and supervising many team coaches and individual coaches and coaching many leads, the biggest, well, let me say, the quality work in team meetings or coaching all happens at the learning edge, where you don't have the answer, I don't have the answer, but we're both clear that life is requiring an answer. Yeah. And it's through that sort of inquiry we've just opened up just now that we'll start to see how is the future knocking on your door, Joel, and asking you to step up to something new or give birth to something new. We'll discover that together. And when we get to that learning edge in a team or an individual or an organization, there's always a panic, and that's what I say. So, what was the answer, Peter? And at that point, I have to say, well, I've no idea, but it sounds like that's what we're going to have to discover together. Yeah. So I'm not there as expert, but I'm not there as doing the coaching because we're partnering in that. I'm not there on your agenda. I'm there on what life is requiring.
So just staying with that's beautiful, being at that learning edge. Do you have an example to mind where you stayed at that edge with a team or a leader you work with, where some kind of clarity or sense of what needed to happen emerged? I'm wondering about how, in a way, how that kind of invitation you made, which opened up so much, then kind of translates into things changing, which I can get a sense of how it would, but do you have an example?
I have a lot. I'm just thinking of one that would be most useful for the people listening. I don't know why this one came to mind. Because another thing I often say when people say, well, what happens if you're at the learning edge and neither of you can discover what's needed? And I often say, well, at that point, you pray. I don't mind who you pray to as long as it's a system bigger than you. Yeah, it could be, whatever your religious notion of a higher power is, but it could be to the collective wisdom of humanity or of the universe, or I don't mind, but that notion of prayer at that moment is what's always made a big difference, which is at that moment, I don't trust they have the answer because at the learning edge, my experience is the coachee, despite what lots of coach training teaches, don't have the answer. I know I don't have the answer, but I trust that the wider system knows what's needed. Yeah. And so going back to your request for an example, I was having dinner with a chief executive. He was telling me the challenges in his organization. And it was a really rich exploration. And he suddenly folded his arms. He said, Peter, so convince me that we ought to have systemic team coaching like this, right? We're just about onto the dessert and our dinner together. And I said, why would I want to do that? He said, oh, isn't that what you sell? I said, no. Now I'm here and having a very enjoyable conversation, walking to the edge of what are the emergent challenges in your organization, and to discover with you if our partnership is the right partnership for going on the journey to address those. I said, oh, so I said, let's talk about that agenda. Let's talk about, what is it you feel confident you could do in addressing those by yourself? Who else do you need around the table? What do you need to do with your leadership team? And where someone like me could be helpful or not helpful? Let's discover that together. And suddenly the whole thing switches because now I'm not a supplier. I'm someone willing to walk the journey with them if needed.
Yeah.
And that's a different attitude. The other thing, just to mention, and I may have mentioned this on the last podcast, but it's worth mentioning again, just in terms of what gets brought, the biggest interrupter to being at the learning edge is what I would call the blame frame or the blame game, which is talking about, the awful boss or the terrible wife at home or the difficult employee or the non-execs who don't add any value. And in the Beauty Book, I describe this very simple practice from grumble to gratitude. And the first step, which is very practical, is whenever somebody comes and says, I have a problem with the chair of our board, right? Or our non-execs, they don't add any value. I simply change the word problem to challenge. You have a challenge because there's a need you have from your board that you haven't yet found a way of partnering with them to achieve. So the step two is also embedded there, because the second step is you locate the challenge, the problem that's now a challenge, not in a person or a part of the system, but always in a connection. So you tell me, you've got a problem with one of your team members. I say, who never really adds any value. I would say, I hear you have a challenge. You haven't yet discovered a way of engaging this person in a way that you feel creates value in the organization.
Can I reflect back? What I'm hearing in that is there's a kind of move from reifying our experience to opening it up into a flow. So, with adding yet to it, that's changing the dynamic from this being, something fixed and the way things are to something to a sense of possibility. And so I hear this is where. I would say there's a need for the individual in inverted commas. I notice I do that when I'm with you a lot because I'm like that
Coaching
often
with an individual rather than
with an
coaching an individual.
so I want to come back. I want to kind of tie a few things you said together. It's like what I notice is in my own experience, speaking for myself and with others, is that there's this way that I make things wrong. It's like a fundamental aspect of being human. It's like, and it's nuanced and profound and often not nuanced. Often, sometimes it's very, very loud, but it's like this reification of experience. It fixes it. This person's like that. This situation's like this. And I become a victim to it, and then now I'm separate. It's like this, there's a sense of separation. So there's a way in which we can begin to notice that we're doing that to our experience and ourselves, which frees us up from that and then creates opens up the possibility of learning, of being in a sense of more wonder, and that has a kind of flow to it. And then so I want to tie that to what you said about being at the learning edge, which is really beautiful for me because it's like, and you said prayer. And I'm so touched you bring that in because prayer has become incredibly important to me, radically important, not as something I'm praying for all the time, but as an attunement to being at my edge. And so So we could say there's this, way that I reify, I kind of fixate into victimhood, but then I can open up that sense of flow into this kind of transpersonal sense of connection. So one of the most powerful questions I had in my life at one point was like, life, what do you want with me? Like
Oh,
what?
that's lovely.
And that was very different than what do I want for my life? What do I want? And I still think there's value in that question, but this other one, it was a very ensouled question. So prayer, I've been wondering about how to bring prayer into my coaching because it does open, there's a, as many people have said, as you're saying, there's a kind of pandemic of this kind of solo self, it's all down to me. I'm separate and encapsulated within myself, and I've got to make life work. And it seems like collectively, we've got to break out of that entrancement and recognize that there is life is supportive in some sense, and there is a wider intelligence that we can connect into, and that prayer is an important aspect of that. So I'm just feeling this whole thread of what you're talking about and what that means for us as
Lovely.
practitioners.
That's lovely. And that moment where you said just now about it touches on often on the advanced retreats that I run for kind of experienced coaches, consultants, leaders here, where we do a lot of work outdoors in the ecology and everything. And we use bits of Tai Chi and Nirtan Chi and all sorts of practices. But I often say, this is all on a journey to the point where we realize. Or we can shift our consciousness to not I have a life, but life has a me. And people might find that very otherworldly, but in a very practical way, it's from that we get to my very practical one-line strategy question, which you could use at any level of the system. What is it, Joel, that you can uniquely do that the world of tomorrow needs? Right? And I don't mean the world of tomorrow in an abstract, global, universal sense, but that the world that you are part of needs. Right? Because it's in that connection that your life is going to be the richest it can be. And your contribution is going to be the greatest it can be. So that's a very kind of practical way of, in that prayer, as a coach or a consultant or an organizational transformation partner, I'm asking, what's necessary here? What's needed? I don't know. I need help. And it's then that I'm kind of opening up all my being to not just listening through the other, but I'm tapping into all the levels that I'm part of as well. And it's through that that I think we co-discover what's needed. We're not working it out as individual human beings, or even as two people having a dialogue. We're discovering from a place of openness and humility.
That's beautiful, and that's one of my prayers is to, may I fully embody or fully may it fully enliven me, my unique place in this ecology. That I may be of service, and that speaks to me of when you when in your book about beauty and coaching and leadership around the craft of being a coach as well, and this might segue us into as what you said before about the developmental professional and what lies beyond our current conceptions of coaching. I just want to tee that up, but I think I want to stay just. Before we put the recording on, you talked about three levels of coaching. And there was a third level where you talked about stop punctuating the coaching with an I and be in service. Are we talking about that level here?
It's my kind of adaptation. Many years ago, and it's probably still available on my website, I wrote a paper on the spiritual dimensions of the learning organization. This is probably back in the early 1980s, because I was very influenced. One of my most influential teachers was Gregory Bateson, who was one of the great polymaths of the 20th century, and who was already saying in the 1960s that if we do not shift our way of thinking and knowing and engaging with the world, we don't have a snowball in hell's chance of surviving the 21st century. Right? So he was talking about the ecological crisis way before most people. He and Rachel Carson and one or two others were way ahead of what we took another 40 years to catch up with. But he was the one who invented single loop and double loop learning that Chris Argyris and Don Shun and a few others kind of then popularized. But he talked about these levels of learning and their levels of awareness, and they are in some ways levels of systemic awareness that you can use in coaching. Level one is when where your focus is on the issue, the problem, the presenting issue. And you're looking at, well, what's the best way this individual can address that problem, stroke, challenge. Level two is you're seeing the pattern of which that is a symptom, right? That how is that problem something that is could be a pattern within the culture of the organization, or it could be that it's just an interpersonal issue that's holding a systemic disconnection between the needs. Say for instance, a local government, you've got the needs of the taxpayer and you've got the needs of the service user. And that they may be the same people, in local government, but actually we're all schizophrenic and we want better quality services and lower taxes. But that not attending to that split, they then can get enacted interpersonally within the local government organisation. That makes sense. So what you're listening through is to see the what is the deeper pattern of which this is just one symptom. But then there's a third level, which is actually going, beyond being able to see and hear and listen to the pattern, to see more the emergent evolution of life, right? That's creating the patterns, that's creating the symptoms. And what I quoted to you was Gregory Bateson's phrase. He's quite elliptical about how he describes learning level three, but he uses this phrase, which I've always loved. It's level three awareness begins when we stop punctuating experience with the I, right? With the individual I. So we're not, you can see that in a team. I'm not listening to lots of individuals. I'm listening to the dance of the team. Yeah. In level two. And then level three, I'm listening how the dance of the organization is being played out by the dance of the team. And level three, I'm also listening to how what's struggling to evolve through humanity and through the wider ecology right now is playing out through the organized stakeholder world, which is playing out through the organization, which is playing out through the team that's playing out if I'm talking to an individual. And when you said earlier, well, this sounds, gosh, slightly overwhelming. It does, but I always say to people, it's overwhelming if you're trying to do it with this part of your brain.
That's what I was getting at before, when I was like, if you try to do it from that
You're
other part of
left.
your brain, you're trying to hold all the bits of information. That's
You can't do
exactly what I
it.
was getting at. Yeah. But if you're doing it in the other way, it's a flow of experience.
Yes, and so that's where we get it's getting to the simplicity, the other side of complexity. And actually, I was going to say reprogramming ourselves, but I don't really want to use that metaphor, but being able to shift and evolve our consciousness is hard work to go through the complexity, but when you get to the other side, it all becomes simple again. Because you're not trying to work it out, you're not trying to create your next clever coaching question or try to work it all out in your head and hold all the data about who's in their team and where they are in the organization and what's going on and what's happening in their customer base and their investor conflict. You're not holding all that. Yeah, what you are is you're being able to sense through to what is being required to get connected here. What's knocking on the door, asking to transform? What's requiring to come into birth? And then that becomes simple again.
So could you, I mean, the whole conversation has been about that, but could you kind of say how you would tune in? You know, you're in the simplicity of that. How would you tune into that? What's knocking on the door in, you know, when you're with people? What are the signs of that?
Because, first of all, I'm not. When I'm listening, not to, but with and through, I'm listening with my whole body. Yeah. And I'm noticing what's emerging in the space between them and myself. So I'm also not only listening to my whole body, I'm watching, if you like, the dance that I'm part of with them and how that is. You know, what's showing up through that interpersonal connection. I'm listening, and the sensing in the body, which is where we do participatory consciousness, is much richer and less hard work than trying to work it all out in your head. And, you know, people talk about intuition, but actually intuition is something that emerges out of all these different levels of listening, which you could not have constructed, but it emerges out of the patterns. Yeah. But it's partly because I'm not, one of the things we have to give up to be able to do that simply is wanting to impress our coachee or wanting to have good feedback or wanting to be liked by them. Right? I always say, you know, the only side I'm on is the side of what is struggling to get born. And if I can hold that, whether I'm working with an individual team of teams, or organization, my focus becomes quite simple. I'm not trying to get it right for anyone.
And I really love this. And this again was what I was trying to get at earlier when I was saying that it's like an attunement, you know, more than a conceptual
Lovely term,
collection of
attunement.
all the maps. It's like, so it's a whole body attunement. But do you find yourself like attuning to a particular kind of aspect of that whole ecology of, you know, people or you know, aspects of it? Or like I guess people listening would be like, wow, amazing attuning to what's coming in. But how does that attunement then start to reveal? Is it, were you, you know, would you
Well,
start to then suddenly feel a quality, an
I'm
idea
very
coming
interested.
in? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very interested in all the things that interfere with that. So, you know about my concept of wide-angled empathy, because, you know, having in the past trained psychotherapists and consultants and coaches and team coaches, one of the things that by becoming more emotionally literate and empathic is a very human thing, particularly in the West. To have enormous empathy for the person who's in the room with us, right? And to start to see the world through their eyes and hear about all these awful people out there. And then we start to imagine there are awful people out there. And wide-angled empathy is a very simple practice to try and hold to having as much empathy for everyone in the story as you do for the person immediately present with you.
Yeah.
So I have to monitor, because what's going to interfere with my ability to not only empathically resonate with the other, but to resonate with all the nested systems that are living and breathing through them, is to avoid going into judgment or taking sides or becoming reactive. So I always, I say this, when you're listening to the news, to train yourself to be able to listen to, it gets harder and harder, but it's a great training ground to listen to the news without becoming judgmental or reactive or taking sides or critical. But to be able to hold, I've just written a whole new blog about systemic Tonglen, which is a Buddhist practice, but I've developed it so that you listen to Zelensky and Putin, but then you listen to what's the dance between them, and then you listen to what is Putin holding for all the people he leads, and what's Zelensky holding for the people they lead, and what's happening in the space between those two peoples, and then beyond that is the history. It's not that I need to know all the history, but what I'm focused on, what I'm having compassion for, isn't for Zelensky coping with the awful Putin or Putin coping with the awful NATO. Right? It's depersonalized. I'm empathizing with the suffering that's grown up in the space between the Russian people and the Ukrainian people, and how that's emerged through history. Now, I'm not seeing it as the work of a bad, evil leader. And that is essential training, I think, for doing coaching work, because otherwise we other all sorts. And I just get very sensitive to how, we talk about this. You can't do that in this system or this organization. The organization is not a thing. It's a living, interconnected organism, co-created by
So,
the people within it and all the people outside of it that it's connected to.
I'm hearing for you that it's been a, it's a whole body, whole sensing experience, and you're aware of where you might be trying to, I mean, to or a coach could be aware of where do they reify into a part that wants to please the client, get results. Where might you start othering, which also co-opts that consciousness and kind of, narrows it down in a particular way. So to notice those aspects and then to kind of listen to being, to move to that edge in a sense and attune to what might be wanting to connect together or to happen or that there's a kind of theme or quality that becomes present that wasn't before.
Yes, that's why I'll use the term. We're in a generative, collaborative inquiry process of discovering what's needed. What's your world needing? The only you, because of where you are located in the wider system, can respond to. What is yours to do?
And that feels to me really exquisite because it feels like it's then inviting emergence in a sense. It's like there's a sense of tuning into the ecology and that you've broadened out and now there's an invitation. I think you said before it's like I can't remember the phrase you used, but it's like life having a me experience. Suddenly, like it's coming back into the unique emergence and evolution of the system through the individual or team and its connection. And so I'm really tuning into that.
I'm just going to say the important
Yeah,
thing I think
go ahead.
there is that the emergence is happening not in me or the coachee or just in our interpersonal relationship. The emergence is always happening for me in a triangle between the two of us and their world and what it's requiring. It's that third part of the triangle, I think, that is the most significant place we have to focus. Or, it's so the co-creation is triadic, not dyadic. The emergence is in that dance between the two of us, but the dance between the two of us and what life is, how life is changing, what's needed is changing, and what's struggling to get born.
It's really beautiful. So then what do you think is the core? I know we are, we haven't, I would love to give this question more space, but
Well,
we
let me just link it to again a conversation we had earlier, Joel, which is I mentioned to you that in the Team of Teams books, which I know you've briefly read, there's a chapter where I make an urgent plea for the fact that we've developed all these fragmented development professions
which is where I was going. Yeah.
of different sorts of, we've got 100 flavors of coaching, and we've got at least 15, 16 accrediting coach bodies around the world who compete with each other. We've got differences between team facilitation, team coaching, systemic team coaching, team of teams coaching that, I've written about at length, organizational consultancy, organizational development, organizational learning, appreciative inquiry. We've got strategy consulting, we've got HR, organizational psychology, counseling at work. And actually, we end up with a development profession that's even more siloed and fragmented than the organizations we're trying to help and the communities we're trying to help. And what I'm sort of making a call for is, going back to what I said, that the great work of our time is how we evolve human consciousness. And that has to be not at any one of those levels, it has to be across them. And the world is crying out for people who could connect depth development at the individual, interpersonal, team of teams, organization, stakeholder world, between organizations and investors, customers, between the stakeholders, between countries. For instance, at the moment, we have these constant COP conferences with great commitments or agreements that don't transfer and sustain in terms of changed action. And where are the people who can consult to that and break that pattern? And then ultimately between the human, healing the split between the human and the more than human world. Because it's in that final split, we will not solve the climate crisis by through technology and left brain intelligence. We're only going to do it if we realize that we are just one small part of the ecology. We're the youngest child of creation that's been here much longer than we have. And as soon as unless we fall in love with it and see it as part of our family and we're a small part of it, there's no way we would deal with the ecological crisis. And I suppose that's the bigger picture that we all need to be in service of, and to realize it doesn't matter which level we work at, we're working at all the levels. And it can be simple, but the work to get to that simplicity is hard work.
Yeah, thank you. Which speaks to me, I've been thinking about what would be a practitioner who lies beyond coaching, as it feels that word becomes inadequate perhaps, and maybe it is just the evolution of consciousness, someone who serves the evolution of consciousness. Maybe all labels are problematic if it labels the individual. Maybe the label is in, it's actually that collective evolution that's so there's something simple in that that I'm taking away with me. Yeah, Peter, I know we're at our time and just, as usual, I so appreciate our conversations and what
Me
you
too.
shared. Yeah. I know you've mentioned your books, but yeah, would you like to name them again and where we can find out more about what you're up to as well?
The book that came out last year, which I've had an amazing response to from so many people, because I think it's the one that has more of my heart and soul in it than any of my other books, is Beauty and Leadership in Coaching and Its Role in Transforming Human Consciousness. And I do get quite practical towards the end of that book. It starts off very philosophical, but about what does that mean in terms of how we do dialogue in right down in coaching and in leadership. And the other one is that came out that I wrote with Catherine Carr was Team of Teams Coaching, using a teaming approach to increase business impact. How do we link team coaching to organizational transformation? And there are many case studies in that, very practical case studies of what it actually looks like in practice. That's from Kogan Page. That they're all on our website, which is www.renewalassociates.co.uk, and there are lots of free material on there, like my blogs on things like wide-angled empathy and systemic Tonglen, and how do we move from grumble to gratitude. So please go there and see what's there, and may it be of help to you widening your ripple effect and the beneficial impact you all are creating for the world of our grandchildren.
Maybe so. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Joel.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is for me the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this, and it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches. Because our times are calling for something deeper, we've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign-up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.